we have in this chapter. As you look at the heading of it, it is also a psalm of the sons of Korah. And if you've been here the last few weeks, Carrie has spoken about that a little bit. And I wanted to kind of mention that, and we're going to start, if you want to mark that, I want to go to Numbers chapter 26. I want to start there. And I know Carrie had mentioned this a few weeks ago, and I want to kind of go back and revisit this so that we can get some perspective that I think we'll see is very interesting with the short psalm. Numbers chapter 26, starting in verse 9. And it reads, the sons of Eliab, Nemuel, and Dathan, and Abiram. These are the Dathan and Abiram, who were called by the congregation, who contended against Moses and against Aaron in the company of Korah. When they contended against the Lord, and the earth opened its mouth and swallowed them up along with Korah. When the company died, when the fire devoured 250 men, so they became a warning. Verse 11 says, the sons of Korah, however, did not die. And so, this short little passage here, we can see kind of what happened to Korah, that Korah and a group went up against Moses and against Aaron. They thought they had some equal rights, but they did it against God. And they went up, and we see what the result of that was. That God opened up the earth and swallowed them up and killed them. And there was 250 people that were devoured up at this time. But the sons of Korah were not involved with that. And they penned these, there's a few verses right here from 42 on to the 49. I think 7 of the 8 were penned by the sons of Korah. And there's some later on in Psalms and in the 90s. Psalms 90s were penned by the sons of Korah. And so I want that to be kind of a perspective as we dig into Psalm 46. I think we're going to see some things that are very interesting, and I wanted to point this out. But I wanted us to have that refresher. I want to also point out that this was a song. From what we see here, and we see the breakdown of the song, the psalm, we'll see that it kind of breaks down into three sections. We might call them verses or something like that. But we'll see that as we go through here. Looking at Psalm 46, verse 1 says, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. We run into trouble. We have troubles in our lives. And we need to know where to go. Where is our refuge? It's God. And if it's not God, if that's not our focus for whenever we're in trouble, then we're in real big trouble. Because the earthly trouble that we deal with is minuscule. But if we don't rely on Him, then we're missing the boat. It says, a very present help in trouble. If you truly believe in God, then you should know that there is a very present help for us. That we can rely on that. That God is going to be faithful. And He is going to be true. And He is going to be our help through this time. He is abundantly available for help. I would agree with that totally. Whenever we think about refuge and with strength, a lot of times we think of earthly strength. But God is so much more. He's our spiritual strength. He's our spiritual refuge. And we need to make sure that that is where our focus is, that if we're having trouble, we can go to Him, and He is going to be very present. He knows us. He knows us better than we know ourselves. What does He want? He wants us to recognize that He is that refuge. He is that strength. He is our help. Verse 2 says, therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change, and though the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, though its waters roar and foam, though the mountains quake and at its swelling pride. So we just read about back about the kin of Korah. These people were either present or knew very well what happened to them. Because from what I gather, I don't know if it's the direct son of Korah, because the sons of Korah would generally mean that, but it could be second generation or third generation. But regardless of that, they know what happened to Korah. They know what happened to that group of 250 people. And they know the power of God. And they know what can happen worldly. And it talks about here that the mountains slip into the heart of the sea, that all these worldly tragedies can happen to the earth, and God will cause them. But the focus is on, where is my refuge? Where is my strength? That even if we have hardships that happen on this earth, we have a God who understands and can be our strength. It says in the beginning of verse 2, therefore, we will not fear, though the earth should change. We don't need to fear about any earthly catastrophes. We know they happen. You listen to people today, oh, the end must be near. Oh, all these things that are going because the world is about ready to end. These things have been going on since the beginning of time. Because God is in control. God is wanting us to trust in Him. He is wanting us to trust in Him, to allow Him to be there for our help. But there's some confidence here. Whenever they say, therefore, we will not fear. So I ask, are we confident that even if something, if we talk right now about a physical thing or something that happens with our house, or if there's a tornado or any kind of disaster, where are we going to go first? Who are we going to trust in? If we think about the waters roar and foam, we can think about times that we've seen videos, or maybe you've been around a tsunami or something like that, and we can see the immense power that goes on. If you think about the mountains slipping, if we have some kind of an earthquake, that is so much power. And yet to understand that God is so much more powerful than that, that we need to trust in Him, that we need to rely on Him. After the first verse, we have this little word, Selah. You might see that word, might have a little side note saying it may mean a pause, a crescendo, or musical interlude. So this would kind of be our first little verse. And this is kind of the very first grouping that you could say from here. That God is for us. That no matter what's going on in the world, we have a God that's for us. We need to make sure that no matter what's going on with us, whatever may happen to us, that we will not fear. We can trust in Him. If we think about the world, though, they're all over the place, right? They want to change things and try to fix what goes on naturally. Those of us who have trust and those of us who have faith in God, we don't need to do that kind of stuff. We can let the Lord take care of the world. And we need to make sure that we're not shaken whenever the world is falling apart around us. Because we have a God who is our refuge and our strength. The second section of Psalms, does anybody have any questions so far? I don't want to miss anybody. Yes. That's a great point. If you didn't hear, she was saying that as we mature, we should look at how we react to things, that we would trust more in God. And yes, we're going to feel pain if a calamity happens, if something happens. That's obvious. But how we deal with it and how we react to it should be different from what the world around us will do. And to go along with that point, that can be an opening so that we can show others what a wonderful God that we have.
If you go to Romans 8:31-39,
yep. Romans 8:31-39. So that's a
God is with us, who is against us.
Yep. God is with us, who is against us? That is a great point. Yes, Joe. That's a good point. So, and Joe was saying that even if a tornado comes or something happens and somebody dies, we still need to rejoice. We still need to praise God because God is in control. And if we truly believe, then we're going to live still because of our faith, because of what Christ has offered us. And people from the beginning of time have passed on, but those that are believing, they still live. And we can rejoice in that. Is there another hand? Yes, Roger. Okay.
Okay.
So Roger brings up Sodom and Gomorrah and how God is going to provide us a way. And he's looking for those that are going to be faithful and believing. Yeah, he provides that protection. Right. Right. Yeah, so where are we at? What is our mindset with that? Are we going to trust in God? Are we going to trust in our own powers or whatever else? Right. Yeah. And you hear that a lot with worldly people. Why would God allow these things to happen, whether it's some kind of tragedy or whatever, but it's a chance for us to show our faith and to show them the hope that we have, because I truly believe that God being in control, there's a reason why these, in this case, we're talking about natural disasters might have, but those happen. And one of them is to build our faith and to build our trust in him. And the more that we trust in him, the more faith that we have, the better we can show that to others around us and show them that hope. I saw another hand over.
Rejoicing, but I fell on the basketball court and I got hurt and I'm in the hospital, but you're with me. My first actual thoughts were, hey, I gotta get to the hospital, people are gonna take me, what's gonna happen, what lies ahead? Am I gonna be admitted? Am I gonna have to stay overnight? Who do I contact, to let people know that I had to contact somebody back there in just sit and let them know, find out which card I had to use for the payments and everything. And I understand we can sit there and we can think about, that when disaster strikes, God's going to help us and God's going to do all this. And it's, I think I'm not saying it's easy just to sit there and think that way because we should, but I have to honestly admit that my thoughts were not, I'm happy that I cut my head on the basketball court and I got hurt and now I'm in the hospital, but you're with me. I mean, I knew God was with me and I knew God was going to look after me and put people in my people that helped me out, but I honestly didn't really think. I thought more about, what's going to happen? Am I going to have a concussion? Am I going to stay overnight?
Well, sure. Well, Ken.
Maybe I'm on the wrong boat.
No. Well, Ken, I would say to that, like we've said, we can feel pain. We can go through any kind of trouble, and it's not that we don't want to take care of that, and we have things that we need to figure out with that situation. But in the end, are you going to trust God that he's going to take care of you? And that's the point that we're making.
That
there's the point. Sure. All right. Lynn? Sure. Well, ultimately, he wanted to do the Father's will, right? And that's what it came down to. And Lynn just brought up James chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. Consider it all joy, my brother, when you encounter various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces endurance. Let endurance have its perfect result, so you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. And that's where we're at. Are we going to trust in God, and we're going to let him work through us through any trials that we've got? And are we going to let him be our refuge, and are we going to let him be our strength? All right, so let's go on to the second section, and this would be verses 4 through 7. And we know that God is for us is kind of how I titled the first section. The second section is God is with us. And it reads, verse 4, there's a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy dwelling place of the Most High. God is in the midst of her, and she will not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. The nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. He raised his voice. The earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Selah. So, we kind of have, in the first three verses, a bigger picture of some of the things that could go on in the world that we might deal with. The second part is more intimate of what might be going on with the dwelling place of God. And it says in verse 4, there is a river whose streams make glad the city of God. And we have some different verses we can look at. Ezekiel chapter 47. I want to go there real quick, if we can. Ezekiel chapter 47, verses 1 through 9. And it reads, Then he brought me back to the door of the house, and behold, water was flowing from under the threshold of the house toward the east. For the house faced east, and the water was flowing down from under, from the right side of the house, from the south of the altar. He brought me out by way of the north gate and led me around on the outside of the outer gate, by way of the gate that faces east. And behold, water was trickling from the south side. When the man went out toward the east with a line in his hand, he measured 1,000 cubits, and he led me through the water reaching the ankles. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water reaching the knees. Again, he measured 1,000 and led me through the water reaching the loins. Again, he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not ford, for the water had risen enough to swim in, a river that could not be forded. So he said to me, "Son of man, have you seen this?" Then he brought me back to the bank of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, on the bank of the river, there were many trees on one side and on the other. And then he said to me, "These waters go out toward the eastern region and go down into the Arabah, and then they go toward the sea, being made to flow into the sea, and the waters of the sea became fresh. And it will come about that every living creature which swarms in every place where the river goes will live, and there will be many fish, for these waters go there, and the others become fresh. So everything will live where the river goes." So here we have an example of Ezekiel talking about this river that flows from the temple. And we see that it's talking about this in the city of God. And there is some thoughts that we could be talking about in Revelation chapter 22. It talks about the river. I'm not sure if I quite draw that connection, but I have read some others that make that connection. But in this what we just read from Ezekiel, he sees the temple and he sees the water, and that water is there to help those. It is there to give life. And so we can see that is what's going on here also in Psalm 46. And it says, God is in the midst of her. She will not be moved. And I want to make a point here that whenever we're talking about God being in the midst of her, if we think back to the Old Testament, where was God? God was in the temple. He was in the Holy of Holies, right? And so they understood this, that he was there. But there was some problems that arose often in the Old Testament because they thought, well, if God's there, we're fine. We don't have to worry about it. He's our God. He's going to reside there. But do we know that that was not always the case? That they would give up on God. They would leave God. God is not going to reside in a temple where the people are not there to worship him and to trust in him and to have faith in him, right? And so we need to make sure that we understand that. And I want to draw a contrast here in just a second. Jeremiah chapter 7, let's go there real quick if you can. Jeremiah chapter 7, I want to point out an example of this. Jeremiah 7, verses 3 and 4. It says, thus says the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, amend your ways and your deeds, and I will let you dwell in this place. Do not trust in deceptive words, saying, this is the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord, the temple of the Lord. So here we have a people that were doing other things. They were not trusting in the Lord. They were going and doing their own thing. And yet they go, well, there's the temple. That's where the Lord is. Even though they weren't there. They weren't following the commands of God. And yet God's saying, I'm no longer there. And we can cite many times where the people had fallen away and they had given up on God. And that goes all against what we've been talking about all night long tonight. Let me contrast that with 2 Corinthians chapter 6. Yes? That's a good point. Right. Well, that's a good point, Eric. He said that, you know, a lot of times what they would do is they would just take it and they would add to it. They would meld other things, other traditions, or they would worship other gods. And that is very true. But all those circumstances, all that time, they're going away from what the will of the Lord is and what God expects out of us. 2 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 16. And it says, or what agreement has the temple of God with idols? For we are the temple of the living God, just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. So now, where is the temple? We are the temple. And so it goes from a outside, a physical building, a physical place where God dwelt. Now we need to realize that it's us. And yet, the same holds true. We still have to have faith in him, we have to trust in him, and we have to do what he asks. I thought I had another point there, and I've lost it. So we're going to go on back to Psalm 46. It might come to me here in a minute. In verse 5, if we look at that verse, it says, God is in the midst of her, and she will not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. Again, if we understand that God is there, and that God wants to help us, that if we trust in him, they're saying right here, God is with us, and if we look at it from our standpoint, he is with us individually. And I want to make sure we understand that point, that as the temple, that God is with us, and he wants to help us, just as he says here, that God will help her when morning dawns. So in verse 6, the nations made an uproar. The kingdoms tottered. Now, I got to be honest, whenever I first read that, I was like, I think I've heard that word and kind of have an idea. I know the old teeter-totter. Is that what came to your mind? Maybe you're like, oh, yeah, that's it. But that's really what it is. It's dealing with something being feeble, something being unstable, unsteady. Whenever nations make an uproar, whenever the kingdoms are being unsteady, whenever they're not following the word of God, it tells us in the rest of the verse, he raised his voice, the earth melted. God is going to treat us as we want to be treated, in that sense that if we're going to turn away from him, he's going to let it happen. And he's going to see if you have the faith to come back to him, as he was telling the people here. It says in verse 7, though, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. We can have that strength of God if we have that trust in him. The third section is verses 8 through 11. And it says, come, behold the works of the Lord, who has wrought desolations in the earth. He makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire. Cease striving and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our stronghold. Selah. Verse 8 says, come, behold the works of the Lord. Are we paying attention to what is going on around us? Are we paying attention to the work that God is doing around us and to us? Are we allowing him to work in us? He has the power, it says in the second half, who has wrought desolations on the earth. He has the power to cause all this calamity. And yet he has the kindness and the care for us and the love for us that he can do the work in us to love us and to take care of us. It's really a warning that God is powerful, but yet he is our stronghold. He is who we have the faith in. He is the one that we should love because he loves us and he takes care of us. Verse 9, he talks about he makes wars to cease to the end of the earth. He breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots with fire. So we have all these things that can go on between man. We can see all that devastation that can occur, in this case, dealing with war. Yet he is still in control. He knows what's going to happen, and he knows what's going on. And it says, he breaks the bow and cuts the spear in two. He burns the chariots. So even though we know that there's war going on, we should not forget, yet he is in control, and he is going to have it go the way that he wants it to go. And I think that can be a hard thing. In our society, we have all these political leaders, and we have all this political riffraff that's going on. We see it all the time. I probably get 5 calls a day from different political things. But do we really, truly know who's in control? And do we trust who is in control? Because we need to understand that that's truly what's going on. Verse 10, my version says, cease striving and know that I am God. There are other versions. It might sound familiar to the song that we sang tonight. Be still and know that I am God. Thank you, Ethan, wherever Ethan went, for leading that. There you are. I knew I saw you in here. It's a familiar song that we sing, and it comes straight out of here. How often in our world does the world sit still? It's almost unheard of, isn't it? Whenever there's things going on, so many people that want to get involved and let me do it my way and let's try it this way and let's do this. It's not what it says. And that's a hard thing for us to do. If we look at it from the words of be still, to sit back and watch the Lord work and know that he is God. The more we sit back and let him be our God and be the God of this world, the better we'll have an understanding. If we use the word cease striving that is mentioned here, and either one is fine. I'm not trying to tell you that one version is better, but I kind of like cease striving, personally. If I have to cease striving, to cease means that I was actively starting. I got to stop. If I'm going to strive for something, this society, this economy, this everything about our world is keep chugging along, keep doing it. You have to get out there. You have to be an advocate for yourself. And while that's not wrong, are we putting our faith in God to let him take care of things? And if we put it in this perspective of trouble that might be going on in the world, wars that are going on in the world, all these powers from the outside, individually we can't do anything about that. But we have a God that can. And we can trust in him, and we can be still. We can cease our striving and our pushing to get it our way. And so I want to encourage us to cease striving, to be still. Doesn't mean we have to ignore it. Doesn't mean that we can't keep up with what's going on. We don't need to worry about it. The Lord's got it. It says, I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. It says, if he's going to be exalted among the nations, what does that mean? Let me ask that. He's going to be glorified? Joe? Right. Exactly. Right. So what he's saying, if you couldn't hear him, is that all this stuff might be going on, but God is in control. And as we let him be in control, he is going to be glorified. Whatever is we think is horrible situations going on in this world, and death and destruction is not something that we normally think about as being a wonderful thing. But the real result is that he's going to be exalted, and he's going to be glorified. And there's a reason that all those things are going on. And so we need to recognize that. Isaiah chapter 2, verse 11. Verse 11 says, in Isaiah chapter 2, the proud look of a man will be abased, and the loftiness of man will be humbled, and the Lord alone will be exalted in that day. So, if we're trying to be proud, oh boy. I thought I had 5 minutes left. Let me finish my thought here. The proud look of man, the loftiness that he might have, they're going to be humbled. And instead, God is going to be exalted. And Isaiah brings that up, and then he brings that up, and that goes right along with this verse here.